I was born in Alexandria, Egypt. My mother was Greek and my father was Armenian, and they were refugees, and it was at the beginning of the Second World War. Eventually, they established themselves in Athens, in Greece, where I do have a sister still with her family there. I was very curious about the sky. In Egypt, the sky was very dark at night, particularly from the desert. And those diamonds in the sky needed an explanation. And I started to love with the sky at a very, very young age. I read all I could about astronomy, and it was not easy to find books. But the American Embassy had a lovely library where I read all the astronomy books they had. And the great lady, the librarian, when one day she saw I had read all the books, she called me and said, "Don't worry, I have ordered more books for you." That was one of the happiest days of my life. I was fortunate to go to an Armenian school where my teachers told me that if I really wanted to be an astronomer, I only had to study physics and mathematics. That was, of course, the best advice one could give to anyone in those circumstances. In order to attend the American University in Cairo and study physics and math, I had to pass an English exam and, of course, an IQ test. The IQ test was easy, but the English I had to concentrate one summer and do well, and I did well. For graduate studies, the United States was the best place to pursue such studies. For my dissertation, I was at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory in Green Bank, West Virginia. At that time, a huge radio telescope was being built, and actually, I was one of the very first to use it for my PhD dissertation.
I had the pleasure of bringing him to Cornell, of identifying him, I think, first at a meeting in Green Bank, and then inviting him to work at Arecibo, which he did very well. And so impressed by this was I that I then proposed to the Dean of Arts and Sciences of the day that I wanted him appointed to a professorship and eventually to a tenured professorship.
The most important thing for me during my career at Cornell have been the students. And I have taught many hundreds and thousands, actually, of students.
He taught for many years, I don't know how many years, the large introductory 101 course in astronomy. And that course was a legend on campus. It had over 400 students in it.
In fact, when I give talks, I sometimes just say an anecdote of two, and so people can understand or at least get a laugh out of this. And if they don't get a laugh out of my jokes, I get very disturbed. Disturbed in the sense that they don't understand what I'm talking about.
He's not a joke teller. He's a guy who loves to deal with puzzles and things of that sort. He teaches this class in critical thinking, you know, which is largely or substantially related to the inconsistencies of life and the funny things that go on, funny in the sense of odd and inconsistent and illogical. He can't stand illogical things.
Throughout my life, I cared about teaching science. Teaching science not just in the classroom, teaching the science everywhere. Be at the airport in Pittsburgh where you're waiting for an airplane to catch an airplane that is 3 hours late, talking to your fellow passengers about astronomy, having a laptop showing them the beautiful Hubble Space Telescope pictures.
The happy survival of humankind has a lot to do with education, not just science education, education in general. I believe that all scientists have an obligation to take off some of their time and communicate what it is that they do to the public. I think that's very important. They should be able to explain even the most complex scientific problems in a layman's term.
I find out in my life that most people don't comprehend how vast the universe is, how many stars and galaxies there are. My good friend, the late Carl Sagan, used to say, you all remember, billions and billions of stars. Now I say, billions and billions of galaxies. I studied the interstellar clouds, the clouds between the stars, the hot plasmas. These are the clouds where new stars are formed in as gravity takes hold and collapses them to form new stars and baby stars. And I actually concentrated also on the death of the stars as they explode and studied the physics of the explosions and the plasma and the gases that they eject. 10 years ago, suddenly, the university said they were going to give me a different chair. And that chair is the David C. Duncan Professorship in the Physical Sciences. That was actually the endowed chair that Carl Sagan had.
One of the things that I find most intriguing about Yervant is his interest in educating the next generation of scientists. He spends so much time and effort on the space grant to ensure that the next generation is well prepared for future missions and for future things to come. He has spent a large part of his career making sure that not only the New York Space Grant, but on a national level, the space grant continues.
In the late 70s and early 80s, I developed a large program at Cornell called the Pew Charitable Trusts, a group of universities and colleges in the northeast of the United States to enhance science education at universities. In the last decade, I've been involved in this future radio telescope project called the Square Kilometer Array, for which I was the chairman for the United States Consortium of Colleges and Universities and Institutes for the last 6 years.
He's been an extraordinary person for the for his Armenian roots. I mean, he really started the Armenian Academy of Sciences. He's managed to get support for Armenian researchers. You know, it's a wonderful thing that he's done for to kind of maintain the roots of his from Armenia.
They were poor. They were great scientists, but they had no resources. So together with other academic colleagues in the United States, we formed the Armenian National Science and Education Fund, a national science foundation for Armenia, 10 years ago. I have been the chair of the ANSEF, and what we do is we provide peer-reviewed grants, research grants, to the Armenian scientists who live in Armenia.
Internationally also, I mean, clearly Yervant is an enormous figure in international astronomy, not only in developing astronomy in Armenia, which he's recently gotten gold medals for from the Armenian government and Academy of Sciences and so on, well deserved, but also his leadership in areas like the International Astronomical Union that he's always been very deeply involved in.
And he presided over a remarkable department full of wonderful colleagues, outstanding individuals, Carl Sagan, Tommy Gold, Ed Saltpeter, but all of them very independently minded and very successful in their own rights, all going in their own directions. And somehow the warmth and the wisdom and the sheer sense of partnership that Jervant brought to that distinguished group was something that not only kept the department intact, but it allowed it to grow. I remember his beating up on me to get two more floors added to the astronomy building, and he succeeded, and that's no small undertaking.
So I was impressed with Jervant for many reasons. He was an extraordinarily effective department chair. It was for many years. He was one of the longest running chairs on campus, and it was hard to imagine the astronomy department without Jervant Terzian chairing it.
This is really a world-class place for astronomy now, and it's largely thanks to A, Tommy, and B, Jervant.
He has very great scientific talents, but he's also very good people skills, which he learned during the years. He really honed them beautifully, and as he became more mature, and he became softer and more understanding. And I mean, I really witnessed a person developing so beautifully as beautifully as Jervant did. Some people have basic characteristics at the beginning of their life and they just go through unchanged, whereas Jervant developed enormously, and I think especially in people skills.
Jervant had definitely established this tradition of being very friendly and interactive. Everyone was treated as equal. Graduate students, everyone was treated with a great deal of respect, and so there was no schisms or warfare within the department.
He was a supreme consensus builder. He spent an incredible amount of time speaking with people. Any issue that came up in the department, he seemed to consult each of us individually before he actually had a meeting about it. I'm sure in part so he would know where we all stood, but also in part to figure out what the consensus was and to actually to mold the consensus so that we would do something that would further the development of the department.
One of the things that we had to do was to renew the arrangement we had with I think it was Caltech, and that amounted to a commitment of a sizable amount of Cornell money. And I think Jervant came to me at that time to let me know how important the program was, what the history of it was as a person new in the administration. And he did it in such a way that you just felt it was one of the most important things that we had to do. He learned the care and feeding of deans and provosts during that period of time.
Jervant had a very interesting way of building up the department like this, because each time there was a faculty member that the department wanted to hire, even though, you know, we were at our maximum size already and there were no openings or whatever, Jervant always found a deal. He would go to the dean and describe, you know, we have this opportunity and this person and we can't let him go and so on, and here's what we can do. You know, the department will pay for a few years and this grant will do this and whatever, and it won't cost you anything until, you know, many years down the road. And somehow he always managed to persuade the dean, and, you know, one after another we started hiring people, always on a special deal. And finally, we got a dean, Dean Lepage, who's a physicist, who can do arithmetic. And somehow he managed to count up the number of people and decided that was enough.
It's really quite remarkable that he managed to do it. I mean, in some respects, you know, we joke about it, but in some respects he replaced Carl Sagan three times, he replaced Ed Saltpeter three times. I don't know how many times he replaced Tommy Gold. I know I'm one of Tommy Gold's replacements. And somehow he managed to do this. I think probably in part because there was a recognition in the dean's office that this was a high-powered department and you had to secure its future. But in part because he was, you know, sort of a bold and adventurous guy, and he was going to do whatever it took to make this a top-ranked department.
He decided to have a big birthday celebration for Tommy Gold's 60th birthday. And it was not just having a birthday party. It was a project second to none. It took both of us about a year to organize. So then followed Edsel Peters' 60th birthday, again a huge celebration. The dinner was in Barton Hall, because that was the only place you could find, which was big enough. And how Yervant raised money, I mean, it cost a fortune. Today it wouldn't be possible. But he raised the money somehow to decorate and make Barton Hall sort of cozy enough for a birthday dinner. I remember, I never worked so hard in my life, but it was, but what Yervant put in it is nobody would have done it on the whole campus. And Carl Sagan's 60th birthday, which was also a huge, huge celebration, which took again a year to prepare at least. You have to have a big heart, like Yervant has, to think about such very special and heartwarming things to do.
If I had Yervant's nerve and persistency, I would have done much better, but I'm quite happy that I have established a pretty good organization. But if Yervant had my seniority and started all this, he would by now have taken over the whole university.
This department for him, it's a collection of people. It's a collection of people he had a strong role in assembling, that he assembled for many reasons, not just that they would all have good CVs and bibliographies and do great work in science, but also that there would be a family feeling here.
It has been a joy to work with my colleagues. I valued my colleagues here, the faculty at Cornell, not just in astronomy, but in physics and engineering and in other areas. I always tried not to miss a talk that Hans Bethe was to give. I learned an enormous amount from Hans Bethe's attitude towards physics, and particularly towards quantum mechanics. Tommy Gold taught me to be a generalist, to look at things in a wide perspective, to look things in a broad fashion, to understand the environment of the question. Edsel Peters taught me to have intuition in science, to make forecasts and try to see if you're going to be correct. I've actually collaborated with Edsel Peters on 29 scientific papers together. Carl Sagan had an enthusiasm of telling everybody about the sciences. In fact, it is rare that you will have such an individual with such talents.
I also want to say how extremely apropos and eloquent I thought Yervant Terzian's justification of the enterprise of astronomy was. And I hope you will write that down and submit that for publication somewhere. It was really beautifully done.
Somebody who's been a great friend of Cornell alumni, he's the one who started the Friends of Astronomy at Cornell.
So it was in the early 1990s, 1991 or so, that I had the idea of forming a group of alumni interested in astronomy so we can form a group of friends of astronomy. I discussed my idea with my very close friend, Bob Cowie, who an alum and a university trustee at the time.
Many of the people that were drawn into the Friends of Astronomy were first collected through some CAU programs that Yervant has been very active in. So he had already a small group of what you might call groupies, of people that followed him and attended some of his CAU programs.
Why, you know, people came around him to form the Friends of Astronomy and come back to Ithaca every time we invite them and celebrate both the astronomy, the science, and the person who makes it available to all of us and makes it so accessible, some topics that are sometimes so difficult to understand.
I talked to faculty and said, look, I'm going to invite a Cornell alumni group, and we are going to talk to them for a weekend. We're going to give lectures to them, and we're going to organize ourselves, and we're going to become a family. We had our first meeting, I believe, in the early 1990s here in Ithaca. We had a symposium. Carl Sagan was still with us. And I think 76 people came. And that was a great turnout.
There are no dues. All you have to do is express your interest and come in. But my philosophy is if you get people interested, you may eventually get a payoff. And the fact of the matter is that the department has. So we now have a professorship, which is largely traceable to that. We've got a rather major contribution in support of the Atacama Telescope Project. We've got two funds for graduate research and undergraduate research. We've got assistance with a computational laboratory, the radio telescope on the roof of Space Sciences is partly the result of the Friends of Astronomy interactions.
Actually, I think many of them have fallen in love with the department. And they become friends with the faculty. They support students. They actually fund student summer internships for students, for example. Some 10 years ago, when I had another big birthday, my friends surprised me, shocked me, creating the Yervant Terzian Undergraduate Fellowships at Cornell. It was a great honor. I was extremely moved with that gesture. There is now an endowment, and every year I select astronomy and physics students to be the Terzian Fellows.
I started helping him work with the Friends of Astronomy. He introduced me to a number of people, and it was a sort of a natural flow of things where I started doing a little bit of work, first as a hostess, just helping him out, and then we decided it would be a lot of fun to have a newsletter for the Friends. And we created Orion, which everybody received enthusiastically.
And let me tell you, this has been an adventure of happiness, an adventure of making close friends, a great experience. I've tried to talk to other departments to do the same. Some have tried. But our Astronomy Friends group is the best.
My son was born on the exact day that Yervant was, so that was really funny when I happened to call, a few days later just to let Yervant and Patricia know that I was okay. I said, oh yeah, he was born on February 9th, and Patricia said, that's Yervant's birthday, and that was just an auspicious sign.
He is a bright and bubbly personality who just loves to share what he does and his awe and his intense and deep knowledge of the universe. It is possible to talk with him about these things for hours on end, and you are always discovering something new, and he's always bringing something out that you didn't know, or explaining things that were not known or not understood to you before. It is just great fun to be with him. His love for people and his love for science, that comes together within him in a way that is unique, and it is what makes him who he is and why people are so attracted to him.
The humor spices your life. It should be everywhere, I hope all the time. I have friends who are very humorous, and they make life so great.
One of Yerman's characteristics is that he is a very loyal and loving friend. And I feel very privileged having him and Patricia, I have to say, because those two go together wonderfully, and it's just really great to have them as friends.
He and Patricia have been very close friends for the time that they were married, and even before their marriage, Yervant was a good friend. In fact, I was best man at their wedding.
What's interesting is that he's the same person in private as he is in public. And, you know, that's a very nice attribute, I think, for a friend to have.
So I've enjoyed him. There's a lot of things about him you enjoy. You know, he's got all these funny little games that he collects, and so when you go see him, he's been involved with that. You know, he's a great Cornelian, a great faculty member, and a great friend.
In Russia, if you have big institute, the director is something is very serious person, and if you go to director of institute, it means you're scared and heart is beating, you're standing and waiting, you're scared. And it was so different here. Richard told me, you should meet Yervant, he's director of our institute. I thought, all right, I'm dead. But I came to Yervant and he thought, hi, so glad to see you, Marina. And it was so different. And any time when Yervant see me or other people, he's so friendly.
Yervant is an amazing personality. He is determined like few people I know.
Yervant stands out because in addition to being, you know, a good scientist, good astronomer, all that kind of thing, he's extremely determined. If there's something that needs to be done or that he wants to accomplish, he really goes right after it. My wife is a mathematics teacher at Ithaca High School, and some time ago she was teaching Yervant's son, Sivan. Yervant came in for a parent-teacher conference, and my wife explained to him that, you know, Sivan started off okay, was not doing so well now, and that she felt that he could do a lot better and that he certainly had the ability. And Yervant just looked straight at her and said, don't worry about it, he said, I'm going to cancel his life. And poor Sivan. The bottom line is, at the end of the year, Sivan was getting an A.
I was motivated to work extremely hard to do better. And I actually have had that feeling all my life. Kind of work harder so that you can succeed and help other people. And my children also, who observe that tendency of mine to work harder to do better, to excel better. I think they got something out of that, and they also work very hard to do better. Maybe that's a good thing.
So he just manages to keep a lot of balls in the air all the time. He's a doer. He's a guy that doesn't spend a lot of time with his feet touching the ground. He's in motion most always.
Well, one year I worked with Yervant on organizing the colloquia, and so I found that he was enormously organized and energetic person, making arrangements and planning and having all details worked out very, very carefully. So it was very hard for me to keep up with him, that he was thinking way far ahead and planning, you know, who would come to next month's colloquia. So it was a very impressive experience working with him. I have to admit myself, I'm more like to work on just one problem at a time, but Ervant is obviously working on many different things at the same time very effectively.
I'm just amazed at how hard he works all the time. It's kind of liking it to, you know, the NASA flight controllers. They're juggling simultaneous things, you know, talking on different loops and juggling all these different issues at the same time. And Ervant's exactly like that, except he does it all the time, not just when he's at work. He's involved in so many different things with Space Grant and SKA and the NSF and Arecibo. So it always amazes me how he can keep everything straight and he's able to keep on top of so many different issues.
This man that has so much to do and who is so unbelievably busy took the time in between telecons to answer my young nephew's questions because he thought it was important, gave him all kinds of biography information and pictures from the Hubble Space Telescope, and just really he thought that this was important to engage this young boy in and help him with his project, despite the fact that he had to do so in between telecons and probably while on other telecons. He just makes the time for everybody. I don't know how he does it, but he does.
For me, there have been some exciting moments in life when I first used the Arecibo radio telescope to observe one of my planetary nebulae. And I saw the signal being this high while all the other radio telescopes in the world will struggle even to get a few photons. There was a highlight for me. I actually told myself, Cornell is the place for me and Arecibo is the telescope. I made my life in the United States. I made Ithaca my town and Cornell my home.
And it's wonderful to think that at that stage of the game, Ervant retains the kind of energy and enthusiasm and sheer zest for all that's best in Cornell.
Through the decades at Cornell, it has been a journey of happiness, discovery, science, education. Cornell has been a fantastic place to have a career.